It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, solutions for your journey.
Hey Gary.
John, how are you?
Oh, I'm anxious to get the show going, man. I think this is going to be a good one.
Absolutely will be. So let's start the show.
Well, let's bring them in. We've got Joe White from Reuters and Charlie Chesbrough, senior economist at Cox Automotive. Great having you guys back on the show.
Good to be here.
Thanks. Good to see you guys.
Well, as you guys, I mean, we got a lot that we can talk about, but let's start with this price war that's kicked off. You know, Tesla started cutting prices substantially, and wow, has that kicked up a ruckus. So I guess, Joe, I'll throw it out to you first. Why do you think Tesla started cutting prices?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons, and I'm sure Charlie may have data to either say I'm right or wrong. But number one, I mean, they were definitely seeing a decline or softening in demand. I mean, you know, softening is relative, right? I mean, the demand was, you know, they couldn't supply their demand for a long time. Then it got to the point where they kind of could. And they have big plans to expand capacity. But in China and the United States, and possibly in Europe, but I think mostly China and the United States, they started to see demand slacken. In China, they definitely have more competition, in the U.S. as well. And I think, you know, look, Tesla's a very... is a different car company, but they're still a car company. And I think they looked down their pipeline and said, uh-oh, we got to do something. A number of people pointed out, as we've been writing about this, though, that what Tesla did to a great extent was just pull back price increases that they had pushed through in the last 12 to 18 months, you know, pandemic price increases. And I'll bet Charlie is going to talk about that whole phenomenon. I hope he will. But there was that. But I do think there's that. I think they also, with the Model Y, saw that if they brought it down below $55,000, that cutoff, they could suddenly get $7,500 from Joe Biden. That's not a bad thing. So you put all that together. I'm sure there's other factors as well. The third factor that I'd like to put out there is that, so there's the have to do it part, right? And then there's the can do it. Because their profit margins are 16 to 17%. Everybody else is averaging 8 or less. The startups like Rivian are sub-zero. And I think they, and you know, I really believe that they are doing a Henry Ford moment here where they say, you know what, we've got a superior manufacturing cost, huge cost advantage. We've got a compelling product. Why don't we just drive for share, drive for sales, use our cost advantage, our productivity advantage, and go get some market share or run these other guys off the road. I'll stop there, but I think that's kind of what's going on here. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, Charlie, so, chime in. You know, why do you think Tesla started cutting prices?
Well, I think Joe's absolutely right. It's because they could and because they had to. And if you look at the sales data, you can see back in the spring of like March and April of last year that Tesla sales just started to slow. They just didn't really do much. And the rest of the year, they were fairly stagnant. And it kind of coincides exactly with when Elon started making all the noises about buying Twitter and, you know, the media getting crazy out there. So it's hard to know whether that had something to do with sales. I think anecdotally, we have heard a lot of folks saying that they're, you know, they don't appreciate Elon's comments lately. But it also coincides exactly when the Fed was raising interest rates. So it's hard to know where to put the blame as to what put the stop on Tesla sales. But clearly they weren't moving. And I think that Joe's right, that they not only wanted to send a message to consumers to come buy our product, but I think they were sending a message to the entire industry that all this talk about, oh, there's going to be new EV players and Tesla's in for trouble next year and all this talk. I think they just put a shot across the bow and said, we've still got a fantastic product and we can cut price even more if we have to. And I think that's going to be a real challenge for the industry to keep up with that.
So, yeah, so Charlie, to what extent do you think that this leveling off that they experienced of sales was predicated on the fact of their not having new product?
You know, it's hard to say. Like I said, there's a lot of moving parts around that time of year. I mean, I think more than anything, we have to point to the Fed raising interest rates. I mean, that's just choked off all kinds of purchasing that was going on out there. But clearly, the Tesla's got an old product portfolio. I mean, the Model Y is new, but the Model 3 has been around for quite a long time now. It's getting a little long in the tooth. You know, if you're out looking for a vehicle, an electric vehicle at that price point, there's some real competition out there for Tesla. So they're putting a lot of eggs in this Cybertruck basket at the end of the year. And frankly, I often question that maybe some of the moves that Elon's been making lately of sort of embracing red state America and moving to Texas and all this talk, that maybe he's playing 3D chess. Maybe he figures that the future of the company is making Cybertruck successful, and I'll be much more successful being a gun-toting red state Texan than I will be a tree-hugging Californian.
That's a really interesting thesis. I think you might be onto something. It certainly doesn't hurt. Yeah.
Gary, what do you think about all this? Is Tesla flexing its manufacturing muscles from a cost standpoint?
Well, I mean, Joe and his colleagues at Reuters had done a good analysis of what vehicle manufacturers are making on their vehicles. And, you know, as Joe said earlier, I mean, they're way above everybody in the industry. So I think Elon is saying, you know, I've always been an unconventional guy in this industry, so let me do something that is unconventional. And, you know, the thing that I wonder about, though, is that to what extent is there going to be resistance from people who have been Tesla loyalists who bought a vehicle, oh, I don't know, for Christmas, right? And suddenly they're seeing that, you know, the Model Y long range price has been cut by 20%. 20%. And then you're thinking to yourself, wait a minute, I ate that cost. So,
resell the car either. You're not going to get it back when you resell the car. Probably not. Maybe not. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we've seen that, you know, Tesla has, you know, huge loyalty and people stay with the brand. I mean, this may end up biting them in the ass in the long run.
So what do you guys think that Tesla also did this to inflict pain on its competitors? You know, in China, they've got BYD breathing down their neck now. In fact, outselling them on a total basis. And so what do you guys think? Was it also a calculation to inflict pain on the competition?
Oh, for sure. I think so. I think Elon Musk has been particularly vocal, for instance, in his disdain or his criticism of Lucid and Rivian, you know, sort of talking about how if your gross profit is in the negative, it's going to be pretty hard to succeed. Well, he's, you know, a byproduct of this will be to put a lot of pressure on Lucid and Rivian here in the United States. And you saw Rivian just yesterday, I think, announced they're going to cut 6%, 800 and some people from their staff to try to stay in the game. And Rivian's, frankly, one of the best positioned of the startups in terms of having cash. But you're right also that in China they cut prices, and he's getting a lot of pressure from BYD, from Zeekr, the Geely brand that's selling a lot of their new SUV, XPeng, all these other companies. And I think Elon Musk and his people would, you know, see them as a problem and would like to see them off if possible, although BYD makes money. So they're not going to be so easy to run off the road.
Mm-hmm. Well, and another company I would just throw in there is General Motors, and I think it really kind of put a wake-up call to GM that they've got to really think about the price point that they're coming to market with these EVs, the electric Blazer and the electric Equinox that are coming out later this year. I mean, the Model 3 is going to be competing right with those, and with that big price cut, it's going to be, I think, difficult for Chevy to maintain a competitive.
But Charlie, what was so interesting was... Oh, I'm sorry. What was so interesting, though, is on their earnings call, I guess Tuesday, you know, Mary Barra was basically saying, and Paul Jacobson, CFO, basically said, "Look, we think we're comfortable with our pricing the way where it's at. We're not going to act. We're not going to do anything about this. We don't see the need." You know, I would say, let's see, right? Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But, you know, the market has a voice. The market has.
Yeah. What's that Mike Tyson line about the best? Yeah, what's the best? The best plans, come apart when you get hit in the face. I mean, they haven't even really launched the Blazer and or even the Lyric, which is, you know, they've built a scant couple hundred, 300 of those so far. GM's not really in the market yet, in the sense of, again, directly competitive with the Model Y or the Model 3. I mean, the Bolt is out there, it's doing its thing, but I don't think that's what people are really focused on, right? So yeah, let's see what happens.
All right, but what about the situation? We haven't talked about the Mach-E price cuts. Okay, so, you know, Charlie, why did that happen? I mean, because Ford has basically said, oh, you know, we've got this long list of people that wants to buy these things. I mean, why would you need to cut price?
Well, I think they have to try and keep up, for one. And I do think it brings down the price point of the Mach-E so that it does qualify for one of the base model will now qualify for the incentive.
I think, Joe, reduction. You pointed out there's four models, right, that qualify.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely. Yeah, Charlie, you're right. I mean, it definitely not all, but sort of what I think is probably could be their highest volume variant. I can't remember what they call it, but it's the premium all-wheel drive or something like that. Dips below 55 with these price cuts. Anyway, yes, that's clearly part of what's going on with them.
Yeah,
but still, yeah,
basically, Ford has just two versions of the Mach-E that are above 55. There's the California Route 1 all-wheel drive extended range for $57,995, and there is the GT extended range for $63,995.
Yeah, but there's the other four are in.
Right.
But I think Ford has the same problem or the same is probably looking at some of the same factors that were, well, first of all, they're obviously looking at Tesla. It's the Mach-E is directly, as far as I'm concerned, is directly competitive with the Model Y. I think they looked down their pipeline and said, we better be competitive or this is going to not go the way we want. Ford said this, they want to greatly expand production of the Mach-E. This year, I forget the numbers off the top of my head, but it's something like they want to be at 170,000 North America, some larger number.
I think that's global because they said they had been at 80,000 and they want to take it up to like 170,000.
Yeah. Well,
I got to believe that's both Mexico and China combined.
Yeah, but at any rate, they want to do a step change in production this year, and you know, how are you going to do that if you're whatever several thousand dollars above the benchmark in the segment? That's what I would think.
So how come Ford can ramp up so well? And I mean, GM is just dribbling out Lyrics and Hummer EVs. I mean, they sold 122 of them last year. That is, I what the hell's going on?
Charlie, you want to take that one?
Well, I don't know much about their production plans to say why that is so. But clearly, I mean, Ford, I think, just had an early advantage on this, and they've been aggressive at moving to EVs maybe a little bit more quickly than GM was able to get there. But, you know, this next year is going to be real different for GM. I mean, it's a tough story right now, but I think they're going to be getting in the game here this next year, and it'll be a much different story, I think, this time next year about having products.
That's what we heard. That's what we heard from them this week, Mary Barra and other executives this week. And we wrote a story, Paul Einert and I wrote a story. I mean, GM seems to be, if you look at their production plans, you know, what we're able to know about their production plans, they are taking a very much the tortoise approach to this thing. They are not racing to go get big numbers. They are being very deliberate about launching. Well, here are my theories, and I'll put them out there in hopes that someone at GM will call me to tell me the truth. My theory is, one, I think part of it is just that the battery production system that they're building in the United States is not coming together quite as fast as they would have hoped. And I think they've kind of said that. Two, I think that they're trying to work down the costs of their batteries before they start blowing a lot of volume out so that they lose less money. I think they would rather make money on EVs. They certainly have said they intend to make money on EVs. So I don't think they're in a hurry to sell a lot of loss leaders. They want to get their system shaken down up and then start pushing the volume when the domestically produced Ultium batteries are, and that whole production system is ready. That said, I think that if you gave truth serum to some people at GM, particularly when it comes to the Silverado electric truck, and wish they do they wish they had that out sooner? I suspect the answer to that question is yes, because F-150 and the rest have certainly gotten a lot of mind share that they're going to have to fight to get back.
Gary, why do you think they're going so slow?
I think it gets back to the issue that you touched on there, John. It's the manufacturing issue. I just think that they, and I don't know that it's just necessarily just the battery part of this. I'm not sure that plays a big role in it, but I think that they found some things they didn't expect. And so let me ask you this, John. So Joe and I had been going back and forth about this earlier this week. So during the call, they said that they plan on selling 400,000 vehicles between 2022 and 2024. That's 30 months. Okay. So, you know, you do the division and that's 13,000 and change. They're nowhere near that, right? So the question to you is that, are they going to be able to ramp sufficiently quickly in order to meet that number? I mean, because we 22 is behind us.
My screen froze. Who was that for, John?
Yeah.
Cool. Go for it.
So, look, I think they've got some sort of manufacturing problem. I don't think it's just batteries. You know, if you look at the fourth quarter sales of the Hummer EV and the Lyriq combined, they were delivering like one a day. I mean, come on. What's that about? And Joe, I hear what you're saying about wanting to get the cost down and not have lose a bunch of money by pumping them out right now. But you've got all those engineering costs that are sunk. You've tooled up the plants to make these things. You've got people on the line. You've got suppliers. I mean, you've got a lot of fixed cost right now that you're not earning any return on. And that's why I find it so puzzling. Moreover, and Mary said this on the call too, they've delivered 2,400 Lyriqs in China. So clearly, you know, their Yantai plant in China is—it's not exactly kicking them out, right? You know, 2,400 cars is,
but
not
it's better
a whole
than
lot.
122.
Boy, is it ever!
You know, the only other thing, John, is I just wonder if with the bolts catching on fire, that maybe they're just taking it slow to make sure.
You mean sales wise, or you mean the battery wise?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But how much is that is predicated on the price cut? I mean, because Bolt had that significant price cut and, you know, to bring people back after they had to stop producing them. And it's like, gee, what a surprise. People buy things that are affordable.
Yeah, more affordable. Well, I guess I just wonder whether there's something that they've identified or if there's issues that they want to be real sure that before they start making these 100,000 EVs that
and not just them, Charlie, LG. Remember, LG had to eat most of that recall cost. It was about $1.8 billion. They don't want to have that happen again. I don't know enough about the Chinese version of the Lyriq. Does that use Ultium batteries? And if so, who's making them? Or are they buying just off the shelf Chinese stuff?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'm going to bet that they're a Chinese sourced battery because I think that's kind of how it works.
Right.
But that's a good question. But look, I mean, GM. I mean, I think three months ago or more, last quarter, the quarter before that, they basically said it's going to take us an extra 3 to 6 months to get to a 400,000 cumulative in the United States. EVs. Than they had initially said. So they've seen this coming for a while. But you're right. Let's see what happens in the first quarter and how many of these vehicles they build. But they're getting into kind of a hockey stick thing to get to even the comparatively modest numbers that they've put out there. So,
ideally they're going to have the hockey stick because, I mean, my question to John especially is, because he knows manufacturing so well, is whether they're going to be able to accomplish that sudden diagonal increase.
Look, you know as much about manufacturing as I do, Gary, but what Mary said on the call too is every quarter they're going to boost battery production 20% coming out of Lordstown. So, you know, cumulatively, that's going to put them at, if they hold to that, that should put them at a pretty good run rate, you know, by the end of the third quarter into the fourth quarter and the like. But to hit the numbers that she's promising for mid next year, they're going to have that kind of hockey stick ramp up.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure if I read this in something that you wrote, Joe, or not, but it really doesn't matter. But that Bank of America came out and said that Ford would have to sell about 33% more Mach-Es in order to make up for what it will be losing as a result of these discounts. Charlie, I mean, is that pencil in your mind?
Well, I think that makes sense. I mean, they've cut, you know, $5,000-$6,000 off these things. So, you know, it's a big chunk of their margin. So they're going to have to make it up. The one thing I think is important to point out about EVs that, and maybe you guys were going to touch on this later, but the Inflation Reduction Act that was signed into law last fall could have huge ramifications for the market this year. And the reason being is that we're all talking about purchasing of EVs, and there's all these issues about qualifying for the $7,500. You got to have a certain level of income. The battery's got to be produced from a friendly nation, and the vehicle's got to be manufactured in North America. There's a lot of qualifications to get that. But if the vehicle is a commercial vehicle, it all goes out the window. And so leasing vehicles can be considered a commercial, which means every lease could potentially qualify today. Like you don't have to wait for the nice country's minerals and all that stuff. Today, all these EVs would qualify for that $7,500 that the leasing company would then be able to offer to the consumer, either, you know, by discounting the lease. So it could be hitting a very important price point for consumers out there that might want to try EVs this year.
So is that going to happen, though? Because, as you know, that's what U.S. Treasury has said. It's not set in stone. They won't issue their final ruling until March. Meanwhile, you've got senators like Joe Manchin saying, over my dead body, we wrote this bill to be a made in the USA thing. But then you got the Biden administration with allies, good allies that we need in our help, you know, and the Ukraine war and other issues going, hey, come on, you can't cut us out of this market like that. So what's going to happen?
Well, we're still waiting on the IRS's final ruling on that, I think is supposed to come. But as it stands now, as I understand it, and been talking to dealers, that's how they interpret it, that these EVs would qualify under the leasing. And as I said, the impact could be substantial. It's interesting, though, that Tesla, you know, the biggest EV provider, they only lease about 10% of their vehicles, about half of the rest of the market. So we could see that they're going to have to try to change their strategy as well and get more aggressive on leasing to take advantage of these cost savings that would be coming if it all gets approved.
Yeah, Charlie, you're raising a really interesting point too. I mean, I think we have yet to see what the gravitational effect of the Inflation Reduction Act incentives and subsidies are going to be. Because you touched on this, you're right. So commercial vehicles, there's a lot of more of a wide open field to collect the subsidies used by selling a commercial vehicle. And you see GM and Ford and others. And as you said, leasing, another thing to keep an eye on, and I think all the automakers are talking about this, is the subsidies that are going to be provided for producing batteries in the United States. If I got the number right, it's like $45 a kilowatt hour. That adds up quickly. And again, you're seeing, you know, why is Tesla expanding battery production in the United States from a pretty big base? You know, why is GM investing in these Ultium plants? You're going to see Ford possibly fairly soon announcing another plant here in the United States. I mean, so all of that. And then when you start to do that and the money comes in, it's going to be interesting to see how that sort of affects the way the companies go to market, right? Because they're going to have this money to kind of put against trying to gain share. And I don't know how it's going to work out. I just know that money is going to be there and it's going to start affecting what goes on.
Speaking of those batteries, you know, there's talk now that GM is looking at cylindrical ones. Gary, what do you think? What's going on here? You know, they made a big deal about going with pouches with Ultium, and now they're saying, oh, we're open to anything.
Well, I think what they're discovering is the fact that there is a certain efficiency that can be gained in terms of the structural aspect of these cylindrical units. And, you know, to the point we were talking about earlier of taking cost out of vehicles, well, if you're able to use something not only for energy storage, but also for structural rigidity, maybe I might want to do that.
Yeah, you know, that Ultium, it's a very clever design, but, you know, they put the batteries in modules and the modules, you know, go into a pack and the whole pack goes into the vehicle. It's heavy, you know, and, you know, Tesla did what, you know, cell to pack. And now you've got Foxconn doing cell to chassis. So maybe that's why they're rethinking it. But Charlie, as you know, once you set up a battery plant to make pouches or, you know, prismatic or cylindrical, you pretty much make that. You can't take a pouch plant and just say, oh, let's make cylindrical. That's all new equipment. So how long would it take GM to go to cylindrical if it changed its mind?
Oh boy, I don't have an answer on that one, but I do know that the battery technology is still evolving, and you know, in China they're still looking at these solid state batteries, and I know that the Honda and Toyota are still talking about fuel cell batteries. So I think there's still a lot more technology to evolve from all of this, but in terms of how long it's going to take GM to pivot if they need to, I don't have an answer on that one.
Joe, let me ask you this. Maybe you know the answer to this question, but you know, you're talking earlier about the amount of money that can be made from making batteries, right? From, you know, the government will give them money depending on the quantity. Is it possible that this becomes sort of the new credits that companies are going to have? They're just going to like build a whole bunch of batteries and just, you know, have this dough, and whether or not they use that in a vehicle is like, doesn't really matter.
Well, yeah. I don't know about the last part, but the first part, absolutely. I mean, it just seems to be no question that that bringing battery production onshore and bulking up battery production in the United States to take advantage of these subsidies is suddenly like the, you know, job one in the whole industry. And you see everybody doing it. I mean, CATL, the Chinese battery company, is apparently, as we speak, you know, the state of Michigan is trying to land a big plant from them. You see there's other companies. But yeah, that I mean, and again, I think Charlie and I were both at a Federal Reserve conference not that long ago, and this subject came up, and it's one of those things that everybody focuses on the consumer incentive, the $7,500, if I get my tax break or not. These production incentives, the battery incentive, 45 per kilowatt hour, subsidies for converting existing plants from combustion vehicles to electric vehicles. There's billions of dollars that have been put on the table through the Inflation Reduction Act that off on the production side, to try to draw production into the United States. And these companies are all going to try to grab as much of that money as they can, and then what they do with it, right? I mean, that's the question. I mean, GM has been, again, I think, been pretty straight up about what they intend to do. They intend to bolster their profit margins. They take single digit profit margins that they expect on the electric vehicles they're going to sell, and turn them into high or low double digit margins. They put that on the table and said that's what we're going to do.
How secure are those subsidies? You know, we got a presidential election next year.
You know, just said, you just answered your own question, John.
Because, I mean, you know, and this makes me wonder if Ford's strategy is smarter. The money's there right now. Go grab it. Don't slow walk this stuff.
I think there's something to that. I think grabbing some, if you're, I don't know, this is me talking, not anybody in the industry, but I think we've seen that if your profit and loss depends on public policy, you are at risk. Yeah. You know, that's it.
Take the money and run right now.
Take the money and run.
Well, one of the things I was thinking about, you know, we're talking about batteries and, you know, General Motors made the announcement earlier this week about that it's investing in a lithium mining company in Nevada, and they're going to have the supply here. And so I read this piece that came out last August. Okay. So it's fairly timely, by the U.S. Congressional Research Service. And it was fascinating that it says, EV battery chemistries depend on five critical minerals whose domestic supply is potentially at risk for disruption: lithium, cobalt, manganese, nickel, and graphite. The U.S. Geological Survey designated these and other minerals as critical according to the methodology codified in the Energy Act of 2020. The U.S. is heavily dependent on imports for these minerals for use in EV batteries and other applications. The U.S. currently mines some lithium, cobalt, and nickel, but it does not currently mine any manganese or graphite. Okay, so then I started looking into the availability of cobalt. Okay, and so cobalt is used in batteries, and cobalt, oh, by the way, is used in magnets, which go into, what's that? Oh, that's right, electric motors, okay? So the Republic of the Congo mined 120,000 metric tons in 2021. Russia, Australia, the Philippines, Canada, Cuba, New Guinea, and Madagascar, the other leading sources, 31,000. That's it. The U.S. isn't even on the list. Yeah. So
big problem.
Are we betting on a technology that we're perhaps going to be completely resource constrained if it takes off the way people suggest it will?
Yes. And then the Pope came out yesterday and said, don't mine all this stuff out of the Congo.
Yeah. No. All, yeah. Yes. In fact, NPR had a whole big thing about the terrible conditions that under which cobalt is mined in Congo and the exploitation of the people who do that. I'm not making light of it. It's a serious issue, and it's a serious issue for the industry, right? I mean, as well. And I mean, all of the things you said. And of course, then you talk about a lot of these minerals. A lot of that is not work you'd want to have done next to your house. And it's mostly, and a lot of it is done in China, maybe mostly. So it's very difficult.
Yeah, it's a big issue, and I think as an industry we haven't really thought about the long term consequences of just replacing Saudi oil and our dependency on that with having to import these precious metals from other countries. It does seem like it's a crazy public policy to be approaching this, but I think as the industry is planning forward, they have to just assume that this stuff is going to be there. I don't know how Ford and GM and any of these companies, you know, they can't get into the political ramifications of what's going on in the Congo. They just got to focus on are the materials going to be there that they're going to need.
Well, look, we know for a fact, I mean, they're all focused on how do you take cobalt out of the battery, right? I believe it's in the cathode. The cathode accounts for 50% of the cost of a battery. So they're hyper focused on how do you get that cobalt out of there. And, you know, there will be new mines opening up, and they may not all be in the United States, but they will be with allies of the U.S. With which it has free trade agreements. So they'll be able to qualify that for the IRA money.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, it almost seems to me that this is like, okay, let's say that you had a special material to make lug nuts with, right? And there was only a limited amount of this special lug nut material. And people are saying, we're going to go forward and we're going to make millions and millions of cars, but you know, we don't necessarily know whether we're going to have that lug nut material. Oh, never mind. Go ahead. Let's build those factories.
No, yeah. I think that, look, I mean, I think that's the challenge, certainly near term. I mean, John, you're right. I mean, there's lots of effort and apparently an investment going into mining, you know, developing mines for these critical materials in places that are not as problematic as Congo or other locations. But the problem is that takes a lot of time. And in the meantime, you've got to spike in materials prices because of relative scarcity, which is coming at the exact wrong time. Back to what we started talking about at the beginning of the show. If you're going to have a price war and your input costs are surging because of scarcity, which seems to be what's happening, that's a rough recipe. And I think that's what the industry's got to struggle with now.
Okay, we got to take a quick commercial break right now, but I'm going to come back at you guys. I got a question about, is Tesla going to have to do more price cuts? But first, a message from our sponsor.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
How do Bridgestone tires stop shorter on what roads? It's their HydroTrack technology. But you don't have to know how the science works. Just where the brake is. What really matters is they're Bridgestone.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, we're back. And so what do you guys think? I mean, is, you know, we know that Tesla's getting a big bump in sales right now because it cut its prices. But is this just a sugar high that's going to wear off sometime later this year? Is it going to have to initiate additional price cuts?
So let me cheat here. Yeah. Joe, I found your figures that you guys calculated. So these are from your the net profit numbers. And so you have Tesla making $9,574 per vehicle, GM making $2,150 per vehicle, and Ford making $762 per vehicle. Now, I don't know if the Tesla number is before the price cut or not.
That's before. It was before.
Okay. So even taking the price cuts out, they got a lot of headroom there.
Yeah, they have a lot of headroom. They have a lot of headroom, and they don't have to give it all away. But they've got a lot of headroom. But again, I mean, I know Charlie's talked about this. I mean, this comes at a time when there's a lot of concern just in general in the industry about affordability, right? I mean, you know, and I think that, you know, Tesla's playing to an affluent clientele, but even affluent people are, you know, we're starting to kind of get headaches and you know, go faint looking at these prices. So, I mean, I do think there's going to be pressure across the whole industry to kind of recalibrate somehow. And Tesla's got the wherewithal to do that without putting themselves, you know, putting themselves in the red. So, you know, that's what they're up to.
So where does that leave everyone else? You know, I'm looking at what NIO in China said, we're not going to cut prices. And Xpeng said, we're not going to cut prices. And they saw big sales drops last month. NIO was down 12%. Xpeng was down 60%. I mean, how much can these guys hold to their promises that they're not going to cut prices? Or do they do something else, some sort of other incentive that effectively cuts them?
Well, you know, the EVs are a very niche segment still in the U.S. market, right? I mean, it's still, there's only a couple of vehicles to even choose from to buy an EV unless you're willing to spend, you know, big money. So it's a very competitive segment, but it's still a very small portion of the overall market. I think the broader market is still facing very significant pricing pressures as well, but it's very specific to each brand. The whole industry may have seen inventory much better, but some brands are still looking at extremely tight inventories. Most of your Asian manufacturers are still looking at incredibly tight inventories, while the Detroit 3 are, you know, essentially back to days of supply numbers, back to pre-COVID levels, it seems like many of them. So I think the EV segment is going to have its own pricing issues, and I think there is pressure to try and keep up with whatever Tesla is doing for the EVs. For everybody else, it's going to be a free-for-all this year, and I think we're going to see the Detroit 3 having to start getting real aggressive on cutting and discounting and 0% financing. And I think you're going to see the Asian manufacturers sitting tight and seeing, how long can we stay lean and mean, or are we going to have to cut price as well if we're losing a lot of market share? And that's certainly what we're going to be looking at here through the course of the year.
Yeah, I was watching 1923, the Yellowstone prequel drama, which is, you know, very much aimed at kind of a heartland audience. And all of a sudden they take a break and there's an ad for the Ram truck with a $3,000 cash rebate splashed across the screen. And I thought, oh my God, and what, you know, where's my calendar? What year am I in? I'm having a COVID flashback. Yeah. Right. I'm in 1983. But at any rate, I was like, oh, something's different, because that you didn't see those 6-12 months ago. Now you do. Something's going on, right? I mean, that caught my attention.
So Charlie, why is that the case? I mean, are they just not having people buy these, that people are beginning to be resistant to high prices, or, you know, or is it like, oh gee, the factory's open, we got chips, let's make vehicles?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, right? I mean, you know, the Detroit 3 were hit really hard and early with the inventory crisis back in 2021. The Asian manufacturers were maybe hit a little bit later, but then they're still dealing with it, while the Detroit 3 appear to have come out of it, or at least are a large way out of it. And it does seem like the situation that they're in today is they're either going to have to start thinking about cutting production, and that's a very difficult decision to make and not very popular, or they're going to have to start getting real aggressive on incentives. And the thing I'm wrestling with is that they've gone through so much pain to create this seller's market, you know, this tight inventory, the MSRP is the price, to just sort of go back to the way we always did things before, just because things get a little tough out there, it does seem like we're kind of giving away this market that the Detroit 3 and the whole industry has been able to create with these strong prices. I would have to think they're reluctant to do that. But we're seeing these inventory levels rise so quickly that I have to believe, like just as you saw with that Ram ad, that we're going to see many more of those throughout the first quarter of this year, as the Detroit 3 are really trying to get those inventory levels back down. And we may see that they decide to do some cuts in production. We also know that there's contract negotiations for the UAW coming up later this year. Maybe there's some inventory building for that. I don't know whether they're thinking that far down the road, but it's certainly something that could be another issue they have to deal with later this year.
Yeah, they probably are thinking that far down the road. That I would think so. And that's a whole nother show, what's going to happen with the UAW. But when you said that, I thought, yeah, that is probably some of what's going on. But you know, Mary Barra said they want to have the, or I think Paul Jacobson, the CFO at GM, said they want to end the year at 50 to 60 days supply. And Charlie, I don't know what your numbers are showing you, but I think several GM brands are above that level now, right?
Yeah, we're seeing that in our data. Buick in particular is way up there, and a couple of the Stellantis brands.
But Charlie, you're indicating that, you know, whether the Detroit 3 will, you know, shift back to old ways. I mean, isn't the price cut of the Mach-E indicative of the fact of that's the way they operate?
Well, as I said, I think EV is a little bit of a unicorn out there. It's a whole new product, and Tesla is a really unique kind of competitor. And so I think it's hard to make broad lessons of a price war going on simply by the price cuts that we've seen for the two EV couple of EV products. I do think that for the Asian companies this year, you know, particularly Kia and Hyundai, as well as Toyota and Honda, their volumes are down big. I mean, Toyota had a tough year. They were down 10% year over year. Honda's had a really tough year. They had a little bit better fourth quarter, but they're very tight on inventory. I can't see them wanting to cut price at all simply to try to keep up with anything that maybe happening on a Tesla EV or a Ford Mach-E. I don't see them in any situation where they need to cut price. They're sold probably a couple of months ahead of time, anything that comes in. So we're going to have a very different market this year, where each brand is in its own situation regarding its strategy, regarding its position it's in with inventory, regarding what it wants to do with pricing. And I think all we can do is just try to keep track of what everybody's doing individually. And I think the one thing to keep an eye on is, do they cut production to try and address this inventory build issue, or do they start cutting price? And that we just don't know what it's going to be yet.
So what do you think when it comes to their electrics? You know, Hyundai and Kia got some pretty terrific electrics, but I got to imagine they're going to have to respond to Tesla, because, you know, their products, I'm not going to say they're head to head with a Model Y per se, but those car buyers out there right now have probably got all three of them on their shopping list: Kia EV6, the Hyundai Ioniq 5, a Tesla Model Y, and kablamo, all of a sudden Tesla cuts prices. Are they pulling their hair out at the Hyundai group?
Oh, I'm sure it was a wake up call that, you know, but everybody knew that Tesla had this price advantage, you know, and that they've just been raking in the dough. So, you know, I don't think it was a surprise. I'm sure it was a shock, but I think everyone knew that Tesla had this card to play. They just didn't know when they were going to play it. And I think it's an interesting time, as we were saying at the start of the show, that, you know, with a lot of EV products coming out this year, Subaru is going to be getting in the EV game here later this year. It is going to be a situation where I think Tesla said, we're the leader, and we're going to stay the leader, and we're going to be able to cut price even more to remain the leader. And so I would have to believe that Hyundai and Kia are both concerned about that. But as of now, it's still really low volume product. They're probably, you know, still filling orders from before. Now, whether people start canceling their orders if they don't match it with some kind of a discount, you know, we'll have to see how they respond. But at this point, it's still relatively small potatoes compared to the whole industry. And that's the thing, as an analyst, I'm always like, we're always talking about 5% of the market. You know, there's 95% of the market out there that's still selling as well.
Well, Charlie, on that, can I just beat more on that point? Because I've heard you talk about this, and I have to say I am now kind of officially confused as to the state of play as to the health of the consumer, because we've seen GM this week, you know, said demand is strong. They had a bang up fourth quarter. They Harley Davidson, which is not a car maker, but they're definitely, you know, but it is a fairly discretionary product. Nobody really needs a Harley Davidson, you know, a hog, but apparently they just blew the doors off in the fourth quarter, and they had a really upbeat outlook. That is not consistent with a consumer that's, you know, in agony about interest rates and like shutting the wallet in the safe. So, you know, what do you think is going on?
Well, this was the challenge that the Fed had. We had such a robust, fantastic economy that you can raise interest rates, you know, 350, 400 basis points and not even put a dent in anybody's sales out there. I mean, it does, I think, go to the strength of what the U.S. economy is right now. But I do think when people are looking forward, there is concern that the piper is going to get paid, and it's going to start happening later this year, that maybe we'll see consumers starting to pull back a bit. But I think what we have in the vehicle market is that COVID back in March of 2020 chased out all of the questionable buyers out of the new vehicle market. Anybody that was of a lower income, a lower FICO score, they fell out of the new vehicle market. They no longer are a consumer. And so if a recession comes, these are the first buyers you lose. These are the guys that fell out of the market and took us down to 10.4 million back in 2009. They're long gone. So at this point, if we do have a recession, we're down, you know, 3.3 million from sort of our normal 17 million run rate. We're falling off of a curb as opposed to falling off of a cliff if we do have a recession, because all that remains in the new vehicle market are the wealthier folks, the folks with the higher incomes, the better FICO scores. Yes, average interest rates are going up, but good credit folks are still getting a decent interest rate out there. So the vehicle market's smaller, but it's catering to a much more affluent buyer. And that just seems where it's going to be, at least for the next couple of years, until we get this interest rates start coming down again, I guess, to affect that affordability issue.
Well, Charlie, let me ask you this. This is I was looking at the Cox, your employer's 22 car buyer journey study, and it said that 63% of the people who bought a new vehicle paid more than they had intended to, and 48% of the people were satisfied with the price paid, and that number had been 63% in 2021. I mean, are people souring on this whole thing?
Well, I'm sure nobody likes spending this kind of money, right? If you're a Cadillac customer or a GMC customer and you're coming into the market, your monthly payment this year is going to be 45% higher buying one of those brands than it was just prior to COVID coming. So it's a big shock out there for consumers who are coming to the market to looking to buy. If they haven't been paying attention, they're going to be really surprised when they see what the price of these vehicles are. So I'm not surprised our car buyer journey, you know, is showing that there is some pushback on that. But as I said, we still have a lot of affluent folks in this country. Maybe we don't have 17 million of them anymore to buy a vehicle each year, but we certainly got 14 million of them to buy a vehicle each year. And I think where we're going to get additional sales is whether the industry decides to get much more aggressive on fleet activity to get the sales volumes up even higher. But I do think there is a bit of a limit as to how much we're going to be able to do on retail this year, because the consumer is being pushed. And as Joe mentioned earlier, I mean, not everybody's got the money to go out and buy these $50,000, $60,000 vehicles. And one of the more interesting things that we've seen in the data as of late is that we know that interest rates are going up substantially, that what the captive financing companies are offering, you know, the interest rate is much higher. And so when you look at how people are financing these vehicles, the share of the market that is cash buyers, so folks coming in and just slapping down $50,000 cash, has risen substantially. It's now about 21%. Of all sales, up from about 13-14% prior to COVID. So people are looking at these high interest rates and saying, well, why would I take out a loan for 8-9% when I can just take money out of my savings account where I'm only getting maybe 3-4% and just buy this vehicle? And so we're seeing a lot of folks are doing that. But there's got to be a limit to that. Not everybody's got $50,000 sitting in their savings account that they can go out and do that. So this is why we think that as we get later through the year, there's going to be more and more headwinds for the market. And I think the relief valve is going to be, does the industry respond by getting much more heavily into discounting? And do they start to respond by getting much more heavy into fleet activity and leasing? Because they pulled back substantially on leasing. And that's a mechanism that they can really kind of mess around with to get sales going much more strongly than they are today.
Hey, that's a fantastic statistic there, that more people are paying cash. But is it actually a higher percentage? Is it because there are more people paying cash to buy a car? Or is it, as you pointed out, the low FICO score people are out of there, so that automatically raises the percentage of people who are buying cars with cash?
Well, that's a good point. It may be part of that, but I think ultimately it just comes down to folks are decided to no longer finance these vehicles through the captives or some other mechanism because it's such a high interest rate. It's a better investment, if you will, to just pay cash for this vehicle rather than keeping it in my savings account. But we know that there's only so many folks that are going to be able to do that. So to rest your laurels that that's going to be the potential for future sales, that's going to be a real challenge for the industry.
Yeah. Charlie, this may be a very simplistic question, but what is the definition of fleet?
Well, it's sales to a commercial company, essentially, right, where they're buying multiple units. I think if it's above 5 units, I think it's generally considered a fleet sale. If it's under 5, it can kind of still be considered a retail purchase at the dealership kind of sale.
So, you know, last year and the year before, people were having terrible times trying to find rental vehicles because there were no. Is that the sort of thing that the car companies would be selling into more?
Yeah. So the rental car companies. So when COVID came. The industry really, they canceled a lot of their orders for fleet because they figured no one's going to be traveling and the factory shut down. So the industry was okay with that because they couldn't produce these vehicles anyway. When we got into 2021, the demand was back on the retail side and on the fleet side for the rental car companies, but they didn't have any products to sell them because they wanted to keep the retail channel stocked and they didn't want to sell these vehicles to the fleet companies. Now we're seeing that inventories are getting back more to normal. We're seeing that fleet sales have really started to take off. The last 4 months, they've been up substantially over what they had been doing last year. In fact, we just got the January numbers earlier today, and it was up, I think, over 30% over what it was last year. So the industry is definitely starting to do more fleet as we would expect because this is their opportunity that they can at least keep sales going. They don't have to cut factory production. But they can still keep that retail channel lean and mean so that we don't see the inventories build and the dealers aren't forced to cut prices as aggressively. And that's kind of the balancing act that they're going to be doing moving forward this year.
Hey, Charlie, real quick here. Yeah. Do you think that fleet sales are going to help sales of EVs? You know, Hertz just announced it's going to dump a whole bunch of EVs into its fleet. Is that a venue that automakers should be pursuing as they, you know, come out with more electrics?
I think so. As I said, but and particularly if the Inflation Reduction Act law does make commercial vehicles qualify for the EV discounts, well, that would be great for the rental car companies because they would all get that as well. So I do think that fleet's a real opportunity, but I think it's a big CEO to CEO handshake kind of a sale that's got to happen because there's a big commitment that has to happen from the fleet company if they're going to take on, you know, hundreds of electric vehicles or thousands of electric vehicles. They have to have the infrastructure in place to be able to maintain and charge these vehicles. And so I don't think it's a simple sort of let's do a quick fleet sale that you might do with many other products. This is going to take a lot of thinking and long-term planning for these rental car companies if they want to get aggressively into the EV market.
But
you do see that happening. You do see that happening.
Hertz,
yep. I think you call that Hertz. Yeah, and they put some big numbers out at Hertz, right? 175,000 that they're committed to buy from GM over, I think it's 3 to 5 years. I can't remember the exact term. But, you know, and GM seems to be cranking up production of the Chevy Bolt. And, you know, that looks like Hertz would be a number one customer for that. So seems like that machine is going to start.
Them and Domino's.
Yeah.
Domino's is delivering them.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Gary.
Well, so Charlie, I was going to say that, okay, so whether it's an EV or it's a ICE vehicle, so it seemed to me that whenever I've rented a car, it hasn't been all that deluxe. It's been functional more than flash. And we've seen over the last year that OEMs have been selling very high trim level vehicles, you know, loaded SUVs, loaded pickup trucks. And so the question I have is that A, wouldn't the fleet sale be of more utilitarian vehicles and therefore at a, you know, a lower price point, just, you know, MSRP? And two, is there some sort of, you know, volume discount that the fleet companies buyers get, and therefore that would even reduce the amount of money that the OEMs would be making?
Well, yeah, there absolutely is a volume discount. You know, you buy hundreds or thousands of these things or commit to buying those. Yeah, they'll give you a nice discount on that. I don't know what those negotiations are, but certainly that does occur. And you're right. The industry's been focused on a much more a premium level product, you know, the limited or XLT version, as opposed to the base or the XLS version of these vehicles. So I do think that there would have to be some more ordering of fleet, so with forethought, so that they could manufacture the type of fleet vehicle that would be requested, which would probably be a more stripped down, less bells and whistles type vehicle. But they're certainly capable of doing that. And you know, most of the fleet isn't just buying what you have in the moment. I mean, it is purchased with forethought a couple months ahead. So I think the industry can adjust for that if needed. I think one of the interesting things is going to be with leasing and fleet is what happens to these used electric vehicles. And in leasing in particular, one of the things that I think Tesla has done, and I know another company is talking about doing this as well, but I won't share their name, but they're going to take away that option to purchase the vehicle at the end of the lease. You have to turn the keys back in. And my thinking is they're going to try and maintain control over the used vehicle fleet to try and maintain strong residuals. And one of the things I just kind of wonder is if you lease a Tesla, you drive it around for a couple of years, you turn the keys back in, Tesla then, you know, turns on all the switches that they do to you know, that they charge money up front for. Well, they do it now, and they've taken that 3-year-old 36,000 mile electric vehicle and they've added extended range to it, whatever other switches that they can flip on, they may be able to get full price for that vehicle yet again after 3 years of somebody else driving it around. And I think that's going to be sort of the model that they're going to try to go to, that if they can keep flipping these different switches, they can turn an old vehicle into essentially new and get a much higher price point for it.
Wow. Hey, we're going to have to wrap it up here. We're getting to the top of the hour. And I know, Joe, you got to run to go here, Ford's earnings. So real quick, round table here. Joe, starting with you, are we going to see more of this price war? Is it going to be Armageddon for the rest of the industry?
I mean, short answer is yes. I mean, I don't know if it's Armageddon. And I agree with Charlie that it's not all segments, you know, it's going to be somewhat specific. But I think, yes, there's going to be more price action. There's going to be more price cutting, price competition. Yeah, I think so.
Charlie, what do you think?
I think so too. Joe's right. We're going to see some more price cutting, more discounting, maybe try to hide it a little bit, you know, some zero financing offers, things like that. But it's coming. It's coming.
Gary, your thoughts?
I think the OEMs are going to be very happy that they made as much money as they did last year, because this year is not going to be good for them.
Yeah, I don't think this price war is over yet either. I think the competition is only just getting going. But Joe, Charlie, thanks for coming on. Great discussion here. This is really good. You know, we'll have you guys back and figure out another topic to tackle the next time.
All right. Great. All right. Thanks, John.
Good to be here.
Thanks, guys.
Happy
and
to come
Gary,
back.
You and I will be back here next week.
We will indeed.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for having tuned in.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires. Solutions for your journey.
If you like this program and would like to learn more about the automotive industry, check out our website at autoline.tv or look for us on YouTube on the AutoLine channel.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.